You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know who I am, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer and consultant in the sector and published author on influencer marketing strategy. Influence is also a member of the Marketing Podcast Network, where you can listen to other amazing influencer marketing related shows. In this podcast series, you'll hear me interview all sorts of people from the world of influencer marketing. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast series just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. In this edition, I'm joined by Nikki Herring, who's the co-founder of Channel Mum. And we're talking about mummy bloggers and why they're so successful with brand partnerships.
We are a social media publishing community, basically, and it's powered by the UK's best mum creators. In terms of where that started, so we've been around, goodness, nearly 7 years now. And actually, when we started, our vision then was very different to actually the reality now, because, of course, so much has changed. It was a lady called Siobhan Freegard, who is the founder of NetMums and also the other founder of Channel Mum. So when we sort of finished our tenure at NetMums together, we knew that there was still a huge opportunity in the mum space to create a community, really, for, I suppose, the new generation of mums coming through. I mean, you know, we were Gen X, we had these millennial mums coming through. They were consuming content very differently, being digital first, being video first in a way that we never were. So we knew that there was an opportunity there. And actually through that process of research and sort of evaluation, we came across YouTube and mummy vloggers, or mummy YouTubers, as they were known then. And we said, okay, this is fascinating. There's all these really interesting women with different stories, different experiences. What does that look like if we try and bring them together and create a community? Because actually it can be pretty lonely out there on your own as an individual creator. So, you know, how do we kind of create a support and framework around this? So that's kind of where we started it. And to be honest with you, there weren't that many mummy YouTubers or vloggers in the space 7 years ago. And in fact, people actually said to us, are you guys mad? YouTube is for kids. And we said, hold on a minute. These kids are growing up, having babies. They're becoming parents. What they're sharing, what they're showing is changing. And of course, that's a certain life stage. It changes everything for you as a human, isn't it? And that's where you need support. You want advice. You want to exchange stories. And we were just like, this is amazing. That's kind of where we started. And yeah, here we are 7 years later. And of course, in that time, all these people did start having babies. You know, the mum market is now huge. And in that time as well, Instagram exploded, stories got introduced, you know, Facebook bought Instagram, like so much has happened, TikTok's come along. So yeah, it's, you know, we still have our community of mum creators who we support. You know, it's about creating a village and looking after one another. But ultimately, collectively, what we do is, you know, share stories to support other women and other families and other mums.
And how many people have you got on the platform?
We're sort of quite boutique. So we have about 20 creators at the moment that we work with exclusively. But of course, we do work with other creators beyond our kind of exclusive portfolio as well.
One of the things that's fascinated me within the influencer space is why it's so dominated by women. I mean, it isn't even 60-40, it's more 85-15, isn't it? It's quite phenomenal. Are you just better communicators? Are you better at selling stuff? Or why do you think that's the case? And particularly perhaps with mummy bloggers?
Do you know, it's a fascinating question. And I think when it comes to the gender split, I genuinely don't know. Do I think we're better communicators? Not necessarily, but are we more comfortable perhaps with sharing some stories which sometimes can be quite deep, quite emotional, quite raw? Maybe we are, because of the way we've been conditioned as men and women, rightly or wrongly, you know, and maybe perhaps some of that inherent kind of behavior is still there possibly. But I mean, I really do hope to see many more men kind of coming forward into this space and sharing all different stories with us. I mean, you know, the dad market is definitely growing, you know, in the way that, you know, the stay-at-home dads, you know, that's grown hugely over the last few years. So those dads want to kind of come into those parenting conversations now as well, because they're kind of doing the predominant, you know, parenting role at home, and they want to share those experiences too. So that's really good to see that growth in that area. But I'm coming back to sort of mums and why that's so popular, and it is, I mean, it's huge on Instagram particularly. YouTube is still obviously a huge space, but we've seen a huge amount of growth in the Instagram feed and channels. But I suppose there's a couple of things. So let's just think about it from a commercial perspective, firstly. So all research that we've done, research that many other people have done, shows on average, mums make 85% of household purchasing decisions.
That's interesting.
That's a lot, right? Yeah. So we're talking mums are involved in household purchasing, financial, car decisions, because, you know, the reality is when you have children, safety becomes your number one priority. So all of a sudden, well, you perhaps may not have been that bothered before, actually the car and the purchase of the car becomes really important to you. Of course, travel, all the FMCGs you can imagine. So mums are making a huge amount of purchasing decisions every single day. And so, of course, they're going to be really attractive to brands. And the other thing, big reveal, Gordon, is the thing that people forget, that mums are also women. Have our own identities.
Never.
Yes. You'd be amazed how many people kind of forget that. Oh, but you just do the mum stuff. On an individual basis, beauty, fashion, healthcare, wellness, even independent travel sometimes, if you are lucky to do that, if you've got people to kind of support you and you look after your kids for a couple of days or whatever. So as a female and as a mother, there's such a huge opportunity, I think, because we're talking about so much, sharing so much in so many kind of different aspects of life. So I think sort of going back to my point, really commercially, that is why brands are like, we really need to talk to mums. They're such a big target audience for us. And of course, a mum creator is the conduit to the mum audience.
And so often they have really good engagement, don't they? And particularly amongst the micro influencer, even nano influencer level, because they are very responsive, and therefore this sort of community feel is quite empowering. I just wondered what sort of campaigns you've found that you've been involved with that have been particularly successful, and perhaps why.
What we're seeing that's starting to work particularly well, and I know many people in the industry would agree with me on this, is the longer term relationships, the more ambassadorial relationships with brands, rather than the sort of ad hoc dipping in, dipping out. And I always understand, you know, some campaigns are going to be very short term and tactical. But actually, you know, the most important thing really for me, and again, I know a lot of people would agree with me here, is it isn't always about the size of the creator. It's the synergy with the brand that really, really matters. You know, making sure that that connection is authentic and true and real. And I think if you can find creators that have that synergy with you as a brand, then they're the people you need to sort of be having the long-term relationship with, really. I mean, a good example that we've got at the moment, we're doing a great campaign with Amazon, who obviously as a brand have got a huge amount of touch points through their business and different tech products, big family, you know, entertainment business. So we've got quite a long-term relationship with some of our creators at Channel Mum, and, you know, they are able to kind of weave very naturally all of those products into their narrative in a really, really authentic way. And I've used the A word. I know it's such a cliche, but ultimately that is the heart of what we do, isn't it? It's about reality. It's about authenticity, and to weave it in really organically into their natural narrative without it feeling like, you know, a really sort of constrained brief, I think is what's working really, really well. And also giving them, the creators, the power to choose. You know their audience better than anyone else. So actually, how should we do this? How are we going to talk to your audience and, you know, make sure it really resonates and they really understand the product or the opportunity? So they're the sorts of campaigns that I think work really well. We are starting to see a lot more of that coming through now. I think brands are starting to realise, and creators as well. Creators want longer term relationships.
You used authenticity, but I think that's also linked to storytelling, isn't it? And in a way that's so natural. We as a nation don't want to be sold to at all, really, now. If you go down the generations amongst millennials and Gen Zs, I think they trust traditional advertising to the tune of a staggeringly low 1%, which is what I saw in a piece of research a little while ago. So therefore, we trust the opinions of people that we like, that are engaged in our community. And of course, mums are often very naturally connected in this way, which I think is really empowering. And we were just talking before we did this interview about some of the advantages of influencer marketing, weren't we, and how it's exploded over the last few years. What's your thought about why brands should not just spend what they've got, but spend a lot more on influencer marketing? Why do you think they should do that?
I've been in media a long time. Not sure I should say how many years because it shows my age. But you know, I've worked in television, I've worked in radio, I've worked in digital for a long time in a multifaceted way, and influencer particularly for the last 7 years. And I think in my experience of kind of having worked across all those different disciplines, nothing can humanize a brand in the way that an influencer can. This individual is trusted. And I think, you know, again, one of the reasons the mums do so well is that they're showing the reality of life. You know, it's the real face of parenting, if you like, you know, the highs, the lows. And I think showing vulnerability as well is what makes them really popular. And I think that is why they build their communities the way that they do, because it's based on honesty and trust and transparency. And to bring a brand into that space, where that relationship is there, you know, and what you're doing, you're advocating for that brand as a creator, aren't you? You're saying, I'm allowing them into our community because I trust them and I like them. And actually, as a creator, you shouldn't do that if it's not a brand that you like or trust yourself. You know, you have to genuinely like that brand to want to work with them. So I think to bring a brand into that community and enable them to engage with an audience in a tone of voice and in a familiar surrounding, it's gold dust, isn't it? It's a two-way conversation. You get instant feedback. I mean, you look at traditional media and it's still so linear. Yes, it might be great reach or whatever, or branding, but it's still so linear. So nothing can integrate a brand into the audience in the way that a creator can, and using them as a conduit for that.
I've even seen new brands being created through content creators, as I'm sure you have. And I think we're going to see more of that, aren't we? So it's not just about brand awareness and sales attribution, but it's also a key part of new product design, new product ideation, because these are at the heart of their consumers. And the content creator is that gatekeeper in a way, isn't it? So getting that relationship right is so, so important.
It's almost like, you know, we talk about the good housekeeping stamp. You know, when you're working with an influencer, that's kind of almost that version, you know, right there, isn't it? Saying, look, you know, this is approved by me in a way.
We were talking about a big brand like Amazon, but obviously there's lots of embryonic, smaller startup brands that would be ideal for creators. They don't always have big budgets and things. And perhaps for those that are sort of wanting to work with creators for the first time, they might want to suggest on a gifted campaign. I wanted to get your perspective around gifted and paid partnerships.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think there's two schools of thought here, because I think everyone should be supporting small business. You know, that's the lifeblood of our economy, ultimately. And I know lots of creators that, you know, if there's small brands that they love and they want to help them grow, they are very willing to kind of help and support. But I think that comes from a different place. That's not about them getting free product. That's about, this is a business I believe in, and I want to give them the opportunity to be exposed to my audience to help them grow. So it's really about supporting business than taking product, actually. I think that's something quite different. But when you get brands that come along that want a gift, I think firstly, there's a way of doing it. But secondly, I think the reason it's sort of fallen a bit foul, perhaps, is because we have to just think about the individual here, the creator. So for us, all of our mums are career creators. They are not doing it at night when the kids are in bed with a full-time job. This is how they earn their living. Now, unfortunately, you cannot pay a mortgage and put food on the table for your children with free product. You know, it is a career. And in the same way that I don't expect to work for free, neither do you, and neither do the people in brands and agencies, we have to respect that we're talking to a professional individual who deserves to be paid for the content they're creating for the audience they're giving you access to. So I think that's really important to remember. You know, I'm not saying that gifting shouldn't happen. I think there's a role and a place for that, depending on what it is, how you're presenting that product to the creator and who the creator is. If you're a really big brand that does loads of paid activity and then you just expect to start gifting creators, that's going to be really difficult because they are going to ask, but you're paying that person to do that, so why wouldn't you want to pay me? The thing that we do see often where it falls down is how people approach. So if I had to advise an agency or a client how to best do this, make sure you do your research. You know who you're talking to and know, you know, what's their lifestyle. I mean, as I mentioned to you before, Gordon, we've had situations where brands want to gift some of our mum's baby product, but they don't have babies anymore. Their kids are toddlers in primary school age. That's a basic thing. Go and look at their content. What are they talking about? What are they doing? You know, you need to know these individuals. So I think that's just something that, you know, and I appreciate sometimes they might be sending out communication to 200, 300 people. My advice is quality, not quantity. Who has your brand genuinely got synergy with? What do you know about that individual? And therefore craft your approach in a way that you think is best going to land and resonate with that individual. But also be mindful of the fact that that individual needs to make a living and, like I said, has a mortgage to pay.
Yeah. I often talk about these individuals being multi-skilled and their own mini creative agency. I mean, if you think about it, if you were a brand, you'd have to pay for a photographer, a videographer, an editor, maybe a location stout, somebody to do the creative as well. And you've got all of these people often in one individual for a fraction of the cost. In addition to that, you've got an engaged audience. Why would you not want to do that? I think we're going to see a lot more companies invest in the sector. I mean, a lot of research that I've seen is people are wanting to spend more, but it's all about working with the right people, isn't it? That's still the biggest challenge, is finding the right influencers that resonate with you and your brand and doing your due diligence. And I think you're absolutely right in that.
I just got something I want to add to that, Gordon, actually, because I think the other thing people don't consider, which is really important to understand, is obviously creators have to make declarations on anything, whether it's gifted, whether it's paid, if a brand's had any form of creative control, affiliate, whatever it is. So if as a creator you're accepting gifted products and you feature that, you have to label that gifted, of course, because you have to declare it.
Of course.
Now, obviously, creators are mindful that if they start doing that and people start seeing hashtag gifted in their feeds, then other brands are going to think, oh, they do stuff for free, I'm going to approach them for free as well. And then it becomes like this sort of vicious circle of people thinking, well, you do stuff for free, I'm going to send you more stuff and not expect to pay you. So I think people are mindful of that. But also it's about respect for the audience. You know, you don't want people to think that you just get stuff for free all the time. In actual fact, some creators that I think have made it work brilliantly are, yes, I'm happy to accept your product. Yes, I'll feature it in the content because, you know, I actually do enjoy your product. But what I'd love you to do is to give me some free products to give to my audience. That's really nice. It's passing it on, isn't it? That works really, really well.
Let's be honest, a good content creator's primary aim is to serve the needs of their audience, because that's what they've done to create that. And somebody that is really thinking almost through the creator, not just at the creator, and thinking about how they can inspire them is a good ploy, I have to say.
I love that idea of through the creator, not at them completely.
So, you know, if you were giving advice to a potential creator that wants to be a professional, because I think there's still a lot of people, if we look at the triangle, there's so many people that are in the, if I'm honest, the lower echelons of influence, but want to try and make the move into being it full time, what advice would you give them?
So I think the first thing the newbie creator needs to establish really is why, what's their why? And there's different answers to this, isn't there? It might be that actually, do you know what? I'm creative and I love creating content. I have got a full-time job. I'm not doing this for career, but I'd really love to share my passions and my story with people. And that's why I'm doing it. So I might not have a rigid upload schedule. I'm not worried about making money. I'm doing this for fun. And for anyone that wants to do that, I say, do you know what? Go and do it, because actually we've all got a story to tell. And you know, we're all different. We all have different values, different experiences. So go and do that and just try it and just see how it goes. Try different things. Test different things, see what works for you, do more of the things that work and less of the things that don't. But the other side to this is, of course, a lot of people want to do this because they do want to make it a career. This, actually, my advice would be quite different. So I think, firstly, again, go back to the why. I think the bit that often that we see that people don't realize is how dedicated and how committed you have to be. Like, if you want to do this full time and build an audience and be able to commercialize it, make money from it, make a living, it is hard work. For anyone that thinks this is easy and you make a quick buck, I'm going to tell you now, I'm sorry, go and look somewhere else, because our creators work so hard to have what they have and to be where they are. And you're absolutely right. So much of that comes from focus on their audience, listening, watching, seeing what's working, asking them what they want to see more of, and, you know, really delivering on that. And then if you focus on that and your audience, to be honest, and, you know, your audience grows, you get great engagement rates, you have a really sort of genuine, built a genuine community, the commercials will just follow naturally and organically. Start with the audience. Don't start with the money, because if you do it that other way round, it's going to take you down the wrong path. And like I said, if you think you can make a quick buck doing this, forget it. Like, you know, go and try something else. So commitment, absolutely 100%. Dedication. You have to be so tenacious. It's not always going to be an easy journey. It can be a really fun and thrilling ride, but there are going to be times when you're going to think, I don't know what content to put out next, or I've had this feedback, it's not that positive, it's really kind of, you know, had an impact on, you know, made me feel a bit anxious. Or you've got to think through all of that. And also the other obviously really important thing: what story have you got to tell? Why are you different? What's your USP? And it doesn't have to be, you know, a really kind of key niche that's so out there. It might be. It doesn't have to be. You know, it's okay to do day in the life of as a mum, because every family is completely different and everyone's got a different story to share. But again, think about what your point of difference is. What is it about you that you can kind of grow a community around? And also, you know, it's not just about putting out the content, engaging with your audience, talking to them, acknowledging them, seeing who they are and what they do is really, really important part of it. You know, it's not just pushing out the content. It has to be real.
Yeah, that's great advice. Often when I interview content creators, they often talk about their first brand collaboration as being a pivotal moment. Would you suggest that those individuals reach out, network, or try and work with somebody, almost like to create a great case study or a media deck that they could then show to potential brands? Because obviously, particularly when it comes to Instagram, a brand won't be able to see their insights of that individual unless they're paying for an influencer platform of some description. I just wondered what your thoughts are about sort of media decks for content creators.
As a career creator, you are a professional, you are a business. And therefore, part of that comes a certain expectation on the information you can provide. So I love media kits. I think they're essential. If you've got to a certain scale or a certain level of engagement or a certain level of interest, and you're starting to kind of get brands sort of talking to you, then absolutely you should be putting a media kit in front of them saying, you know, this is the kind of reach that I get. These are my engagement rates. This is what my audience love. This is the stuff perhaps I won't do. And actually, here's some ideas of how I can work with you. This is how I think your brand is really going to do well in amongst my audience. So ideas for starters kind of thing.
I think this is so important. I went to an event actually a couple of years ago, and it was at Tobacco Dock, and it was a bit like a speed networking for brands and content creators. And I must admit, some of the content creators didn't know quite how to sell themselves that well, and yet others were amazing. I mean, I remember one travel influencer was got his media kit out, was showing me some video of how he used drones and how he created the content. It was real behind the scenes stuff. And others were talking about how their campaign deliverables really made a difference and how they've become an ambassador. And when you start to see the difference and you think, wow, that's really exciting, because I guess a lot of brands are used to media buys, aren't they? And whilst I almost hate aligning that word with influencers, because these are human beings, in a way they are a media purchase, but in a way that I think is totally different from any other sort of media. I don't know if you've heard this stat, something like 11 times greater ROI comes from influencer marketing than almost any other media. But I always will caveat that by saying when done well, because sometimes if not all the constituent parts are together, it won't deliver that, will it? Are there any sort of tips and advice for brands that want to work, for example, with you? So somebody wanting to work now with some of your creators.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes initially down to a good brief, doesn't it? A good brief. Like, we can make recommendations on who we think is right for your brand. If you don't know the market, that doesn't matter. We do. If we just sort of look into your brand a little bit, understand your brand, what your business goals are, your business challenges are, what you're trying to achieve, then we can make recommendations and, you know, find the right creator for that brand. But I think also with briefs as well is, don't worry too much about the creative. And I know this is really hard even now for brands to kind of relinquish that control. But, you know, when you're working in this space, you have to remember that effectiveness comes from ultimately the creator's creative, because they know their audience. That's really important. I think sometimes as well we see, and I know this is sort of going into perhaps a bit more of a complex area, but obviously rights and usage is huge in this space now as well, as brands are starting to realize, as you said earlier, you know, creators are effectively creative agencies. They're strategists, you know, they do shoots and they give it to their audience as well. So relinquish the content creative to them, trust them. And yes, rights and usage, absolutely, that should completely be discussed. In fact, we encourage that, really, because if you've got great content, why would you not want to make it work harder? But also in the brief, it's really important to outline what you want to do with that content, where you want to put it, for how long, because so often we'll work with a brand, we'll get right to the contract stage, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and we need this, 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 and this. But actually, we need the content to go live tomorrow. Then we have to go back to the contracting stage and sort it all out. So I think in the brief, just be really thorough with what you're trying to achieve, what you want from the content. It might just be that you want the organic reach from the individual. But actually, if you want rights and usage as well, let us know that. And we can, again, make sure that that's crafted into the investment that brand needs to make. And I think as well, just to, again, lastly on that, biggest isn't always best. Of course, scale is important because reach is important. But having synergy with the creator and it genuinely working is the number one priority and should be for everyone. Because the reality is, if you want reach, we can build a supported media plan behind that in a very targeted way through Facebook Ad Manager or whatever to give you that more reach, you know, and do it in a really precision targeted way as well. And if the content's great, it will land and it will get great engagement rates. So, you know, that shouldn't be a worry. But yeah, the synergy with the individual and getting the right individual is important. And again, go beyond the kind of ad hoc campaign here, campaign there, try that person. Think actually longer term strategy. What are you trying to deliver on using creators as part of your marketing mix? And how can you maybe work with a few on a longer term basis to really benefit? And the reality is, you always get more value as a brand doing that. Because I guarantee you, the creator working with them on a longer term basis will always deliver more content than the original plan, because it's a relationship.
So sometimes you hear these people of, oh, we've sent gifts to sort of 200 people. Sometimes I think it's almost like chucking stuff at the wall, hoping it will stick, when actually what you've just said a few minutes ago makes total sense. Working with a few people that really do resonate on a longer term basis could actually deliver higher reach, higher engagement, and more consistency for the brand. Right, lasting question then. What do you think your tip for 2022 is? What do you think is going to be a real deal breaker? What do you think is going to make a real moving of the needle?
Have you got a crystal ball for me? So, well, Listen, influencer marketing, as we call it, is not going anywhere. It's burgeoning. It's getting bigger. It's getting faster because it works. And, you know, going back to what I said before, it humanizes brands in a way that nothing else can. I think the way the tech side is going on the platforms, live selling, all of that is a really interesting space. And I think the creators and that side of social, there's a natural connection there. And that's going to be really, really interesting how that develops. I think the thing that we have to keep our eye on is, because the market is burgeoning and growing so quickly, we have to make sure that practice and standards don't get left behind as part of that. And I know lots of people in the industry, all the kind of the titans, if you like, of the industry, are kind of all starting to come together and think that through, which is fantastic. And that comes down to what is best practice for briefing, what is best practice for contracting, working with obviously all the different codes and the ASA and making sure that that all kind of makes sense. Because when something grows so quickly, sometimes solid foundations aren't always there, are they? And, we don't have to backtrack. So we have to build the foundations really strongly as we kind of go on this journey. So I think that's not a concern, but just something we need to be mindful of. But yeah, the growth really excites me. There's still so much more to come. It's so fast moving, isn't it? I mean, who knows?
Super. Really loved talking to you today, Nikki. But before we go, just tell us how people can find out a little bit more about you.
Go to channelmumtalent.com if you want to find out more about Channel Mum. There's an email on there, so feel free to connect with us. I'm always behind that, so you can pick up and have conversations with anyone that would like to sort of get in touch directly. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn as well and always welcome messages. I don't always get back to people as quick as I'd like to, admittedly. But yeah, my door is always open. And, you know, I think one thing I'm really passionate about is that in influencer marketing, you know, we work together as a community to drive this industry forward and make sure that it really has and, you know, is considered as a really important factor within the marketing media mix overall. And I think we can only do that by working together. So my door is always open for questions, queries, sense checking, idea bashing, whatever it is.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, gordon@gordonglenister.com. Or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. If you're able to give us a 5-star review, we really do appreciate that too. And if you want help in creating an influencer marketing strategy, or you'd like to join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event, then do head over to gordonglenister.com. And if you want to find out more about our shows and others, go over to the marketingpodcastnetwork.com. You might like to check out Jason Fall's Winfluence podcast as well. Thanks as always, of course, to my producer Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.